from last month.
She's very attention to detail.
An agenda? Page agenda. You have your little thing?
No, that's why I was asking.
Okay. Because I always put it up on this. I just don't want to corner you.
I was going to
say.
Yeah, thank you.
No, we're listening tonight, by the way. We're just listening. Yeah. I like that. I'm going to look at it. I'm just going to listen and read it.
Also, like the first, like a first meeting.
Yeah.
I might actually.
The two comp plans are just overviews of what they're looking to do.
Good. So maybe.
Screeneries will actually come back.
Maybe I will get dinner before 9.
I believe you will tonight.
I know, that's why.
All right.
Winnie, I've been here since 6.
Oh my goodness.
So I'll let you open.
Okay, I will call to order the Planning Commission meeting of the City of Cedar-Willy on 4/18/2023 at 6:37 p.m. Can everyone please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call. Commissioner Freiberger.
Present.
Commissioner Koch, online, I believe. Paul? Paul, put you're muted.
He's not muted.
You're now remuted. Why? I didn't hear him.
So he's not muted now, but the audio's not coming.
Oh, hang on a second, Paul. The audio's not working. I don't believe so.
Ask him if he can hear, just
not Silas. He can hear us, yes.
Ask Silas to try and talk to
me. Silas, can you unmute and can you hear us?
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Where'd he go?
So they can unmute, but we can't hear them. We have no audio on their side.
We'll get that fixed.
We'll get it fixed. That's fine. We're good. Commissioner Johnson, absent. Commissioner Frenette is absent. Commissioner Maddox is here. Commissioner Fattisi is here. Commissioner Huggins is here. So at this point, Madam Mayor.
Right, but I'm wondering if maybe I should wait until John is here.
Okay, we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. He's going to fix the audio. So at this time, let's go over the consent agenda for March 21st, 2023 meeting minutes. Hang on. I knew you had something to do with it. Paul, can you say something?
I'm here.
Perfect. No, we didn't have any audio here. That's why I can now hear you.
Okay.
Prior, we couldn't hear anything you were saying. Silas, how about that? But you can we test yours?
I'm here. Can you hear
Perfect.
Me?
Perfect. Yes. Thank you. So we're going over the meeting minutes. So if anybody would like to add something, just let us know. So, Commissioner Freiberger, I know you had a couple comments on this. Would you like to?
Yes. First comment is the public hearing item number one. It's definition for work live. So the work live just needs to be swapped for those two mentions in there and. Everywhere else, in the next paragraph. And I think then it's fine, the rest of the, yeah.
Did we swap that around, though, from work-live to live-work? I was confused
it's
on
It's always
that.
Been live-work.
Yeah. To work-live.
Okay.
So. And it's correct after paragraph two. It's just.
I kind of
used
the terminology everybody was using.
Oh,
that's
I
fine.
I was just looking at how it was put on the agenda, and so to match the agenda, it, yeah. And then Assistant Planner McGowan, her last name in that second paragraph also, just a spelling.
Call me McGovern.
And then down... Or did you want to do the...
Go ahead. You can...
Okay. So on down near the bottom at the motion, that first motion failed 0-5.
Good. That was that technical kind of thing we had to do at the end. We did vote on it, and then we went in and we modified it, and then we I made another motion, and it carried 5-0, and that would be that second line. So first one, 05, 5-0 on the second.
Do you think there needs to be an explanation of what happened there, or?
I don't think any more explanation was required. The fact that when we looked at it, it was just backwards, and then we made that modification when Commissioner Frenette actually brought that up. We made that adjustment.
And then the final item was then that second motion carried 5-0 rather than 0-5. So.
Does anyone have anything else, Pat?
No, and I wasn't present last time. So.
Any other commissioners online?
Nope.
Nope. So at this moment, I would like to have a motion to approve the meeting minutes of March 21st, 2023. Do I have a first, second?
I so move.
First,
I second.
And
with the proposed amendments.
With the amendments. Second by Commissioner Cock. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any further discussion? None. Motion carries with the following minor amendments that we put on. So at this point, Mayor Johnson.
Thank you, Commissioner Fertizzi. I appreciate you giving me the time to actually share some news that I thought maybe had already been shared, and maybe some of you have already heard. But It's actually, for me, it's with a really heavy heart that we are going to be saying goodbye to Director John Coleman. He has been actually recruited by Anacortes. They identified his skills and his talents, and they have brought him on. And he assures me that this is the next best step in his career. I really don't know why C.J. Woolley couldn't have been the next best step in his career, but that's the way it goes. But I didn't know that you didn't know. John had just shared that with me. The reason that I came forward was because I wanted to thank you and John, in particular John, for all the energy and hours and the creativity and, putting up with the council and listening to the council. And, you know, if you get frustrated with this, you can imagine John's very patient with us, and he's been absolutely wonderful. And he's been here 17 years. Next Wednesday at council meeting, 6 o'clock, we have a little presentation. I have a little plaque that I give everybody. It always seems inadequate what people put forth in their job, but I have one for John, and I'm going to be presenting it. So if you want to come next Wednesday night council meeting, it'll be within the first 5-10 minutes of the meeting. So, but just to honor him. You know, I don't know if you want to share any words with him tonight or not. I don't know. That's up to you. But that's what I wanted to say. I just wanted to thank John for the years that he's been here, the 8 years that I've had the opportunity to work with him. You may not know this, but when I was sitting on council, there was a possibility that he was going to be hired on up in Linden. Mm-hmm. And that didn't transpire, and that was their loss, our win. But in this situation now, it's our loss and Anacortes' win. So, So congratulations, John. Thank you so much. Thank you to your team, your staff. You've got a really great staff. And we wish you well.
Thank you.
So that's all I had to say.
Just to add into that, you are going to be missed. I get how tough a job this is. And you've just been outstanding. And you are going to be missed. So anyway, I wish you the best, but I'm a little bit selfish, just like the mayor is. You will be missed, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, Anacortes has every single thing to gain. This is a tough job. It really is. People don't get the level of detail that is required in a position like this. And
The nuances,
the devil is in the detail.
Yeah.
And you've done such a great job here in helping us guide this city. And I think a really good direction that without people like you, no, stuff like this does not get done, seriously.
Well, it's been an honor, and I'm leaving you in good hands. We've got a great staff built around here, and we will be looking for a permanent director. So we haven't quite started that recruiting process yet. But
by the end of the week, we'll have it out by the end of the week.
Yeah,
because we need to do it like yesterday. but we're going to do it. And there'll be an interim who'll be filling in. And but also, Nicole has done an absolutely marvelous job, and she'll be able to lead you through if there's nobody here next month.
Oh, don't worry. We know that. We're okay.
But Katie, so did you want to share anything, John? But I just wanted to – I felt it was really important to honor him, yeah, both here and – in senior management meeting and also in council. So.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So
I won't be able to be there next Wednesday, but I also want to thank you for all the years you've put in here with us, because you always make the meetings interesting. You always have the information we need. You always go find it if we don't have it, and I've really appreciated that. And we had three very nice people be planner before you, but they were bing, bing, bing. And it's nice to have had those years of stability and a good hand at the tiller. Very much appreciated, John.
Thank you.
When I heard, I said, no. I don't want to work with another planner. But, I have really appreciated working with you over the past few years.
I was excited when Lyndon passed, quite frankly. I was like, okay.
Well, we can talk more about that. We've got stuff on the agenda.
We do.
Thank you for the kind words, Mayor.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, John.
Do you want to plug tomorrow night's thing?
Yes.
Yeah, get that on. Yeah.
So for those of you who maybe weren't here or haven't heard about it or didn't come in when Peter was here, we are going to, at the community center tomorrow night from 6 to 9 o'clock, have an event called For the Love of Cedar Woolley. And it is coming together and hearing maybe what our vision is going to be, but more than that, kind of touching base with the public and figuring out what it is you want to see happen here in Cedar Woolley. Any kind of art or murals or changes or, you know, maybe what you want to honor or be, or have remembered. You know, I think it's wide open, but we'd love to have you come. We're feeding people pizza.
Oh, wow.
So, you know. Yeah, there's always nobody bypasses a pizza that I know of.
Depends on where it's coming from.
So anyway, we'd love to see you come. And if you cannot come, and if you know of individuals who may, maybe somebody at the school or something like that, please encourage them to come. So community center, 6 to 9.
Okay. So this is going to be a lively event, not a formal council meeting. It's a lively event. The city is working on putting aside some money to do projects throughout the community to show people's love for the community. So tomorrow will be a brainstorming session led by Peter Kagiyama.
Very interactive.
And he's an expert in this issue of connecting people back to their cities, like identifying what people love about their city and getting people reinvigorated about their city and making those connections between the people and then and the manifestation in public in forms of art or any other ways that people can identify with their city that spreads some joy and love for their community.
And you're not saying that we're boring here as far as our meeting.
I didn't say boring. I said formal.
Yeah, I saw that. $500.
$500. That will be given out tomorrow night.
Yeah.
But more than that, there'll be other grants too that people can apply for, and we'll learn more about that tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was a great idea. I put it right in my calendar. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for the plug.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I knew something was up when I received the meeting minutes with her name on it, not yours. I thought you might have been out of town or something.
The meeting minutes?
Yeah, well, not the meeting minutes. The agenda and the whole package, the whole meeting package.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very astutely paying attention to the clues. So my last day will be next Friday.
That's it. Oh.
So this will be my last Planning Commission meeting. So to that end, I'm going to let Nicole do all the talking.
Yeah, you know what? When I looked at the agenda tonight, I was like, hey, this is great. I just get to sit and listen tonight. Okay, with that, moving on. General public comment section. So prior to opening the general public comment section, I'd like to read in the guidelines. If anyone wishes to speak, please limit comments to 3 minutes or less. Comments may also be submitted via email or mail ahead of this all scheduled monthly Planning Commission meetings and read into the record at that time. So if you would like to speak, please state your name and address or any group or organization you represent. So with that, I will open the general public comment section at 6:52 p.m.
And I will put a clarification on that. If there's anybody online that is here, that is one of the applicants, like you can talk about your project. Well, you will be given time to talk about your proposal during when we get to that agenda item, so you don't need to come to the public comment to talk about your proposal that's on the agenda. You'll have that opportunity.
Yeah, I'm going to put that as part of my. Because you're right, there could be some confusion. I mean,
so if there's anybody that's on the wants to speak about anything besides what's their own project, now's the time.
Okay. So with that, do we have any emails or mail to be read into the record?
We do not.
Okay. Do we have any audience members wishing to speak? We do not, unless Casper would like to the friendly ghost. Do we have any online audience members wishing to speak? I see a Liz PT up there. Liz, would you like to say something? Or
one of the applicants.
Oh, you're one of the applicants. So, yeah, you'll have a different time to speak specific to that application, and that's not tonight, okay?
No, it's in, like, a few seconds.
Okay, it's in a few seconds. So how would that be in a few seconds?
Well, because hers is the first project on the agenda.
Okay, I don't have a public hearing on that. I just have a
public hearing. She's the applicant.
Okay. I just don't have anything on new business that says the applicant's going to speak, but that's fine, too.
I don't have to say anything tonight.
No, that's fine. I'm just, I always go by what's on the agenda. And typically, if an applicant has something to add in, and I'm fine with that, by the way, it just typically appears on that. So I'm just being, just basically reading off of the sheet here. So, okay.
So most projects are not applicant, you know, there's not an applicant involved, but occasionally there are, such as a rezone request for personal, you know, for someone's personal property. So it's a little bit outside of the normal way of doing it, but it's perfectly appropriate to have whoever's applied to have the opportunity to speak. Okay.
So prior to moving on, I will close the open public comment section at 6:55 p.m. And moving on to the agenda, there is no public hearing scheduled for tonight. There is no unfinished business on the agenda tonight. Now on to new business. So the first item is CPA-1-23-2023 Comprehensive Plan Amendments, including two rezone requests. The first one is the Peterson rezone request, number RZ-0-2023-001, request to change the zoning designation of roughly 2.53 acres, parcel from R5 to residential 7. The second one is the Benson rezone request, RZ-2023-004, request to change the zoning designation of a roughly 0.85 acre parcel of land from residential 7 to residential 15, and the final one is possible amendments to Chapter 1044 SWMC to update sidewalk cafe regulations and to add regulations for streeteries and amendments to Chapter 1704 to define streetery. So with that, I just have a Liz PT. I don't know your name. Which particular rezone request would you like to comment on?
I'm the first one. I'm the 2.53 acres. My name is Liz Peterson or Elizabeth Peterson.
Okay.
I'm the R5 to R7.
Okay.
So we usually start with staff.
And yeah.
Oh, okay. So I can give an overview of the rezone. Okay. And kind of discuss the property, and then she can fill in any blanks that she fills.
I just wanted to incorporate her commentary into the open. So
yeah,
just a little.
For sure.
So have at it.
Start with an overview. Okay, so let's start with the rezone for Ms. Peterson. We've got a request here to change the zoning designation of a 2.53 acre parcel of land from the current residential 5 zoning to residential 7. So the purpose of this meeting today is just to kind of do an overview of the rezone, introduce the property, just kind of discuss what's proposed here. So this property is located at 1122 State Street, and it is the easternmost property along State Street that butts right up to the city limit line. It's got R7 zoning all along the western property line. And so, currently the property has a single family home, a small barn, and a shed on site. And the remainder of the property has been used as open pasture land since as far back as 1937. That's what the Skagit County property search. I was looking at aerial images of the property over the past years, and it's been pasture land for quite some time. At this time, it's not known whether critical areas exist. We haven't had any critical areas report done on this property to date. So that will come in later time as development applications are applied for, but for now we don't know. surrounding properties to the west, there's a 14-unit apartment complex. To the west, there are single-family homes. To the north, there is a 14-unit apartment complex. There's single-family homes to the south and single-family homes and open pasture land to the east. So what Liz has proposed here is to change it from R5 to R7. Currently, under the R5 zoning, she's basically limited to single-family homes at 6,000 square feet minimum lot size. So if she were to change it to R7, she would be allowed those single-family homes on smaller lots of 4,800 square feet. She would also be allowed to do duplexes. There's some specific requirements for those. You have to have at least 9,000 square feet minimum lot size, a few other things as well. But it would give her the ability to kind of get more density in there.
I knew the number, yeah. It's opposite.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
The 7 will give you the 6,000.
Yeah, yeah. So R7 will give you the 6,000. So instead of the 8,400 that the R5 zone allows. Sorry about that.
And our duplex on that zone is they're bigger lots, right? They're, you're not going to put a duplex on a 6,000. A duplex, what's our minimum on that?
9,000.
Something, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so increasing the allowable density is what she's looking for here. And, yeah, that's pretty good overview. At this point, Liz, if there's anything, any gaps you'd like to fill in here, now's a good time to do so.
Well, really it makes sense. I mean, we're R7 on the other side and all around us. It really won't change. There might be two additional houses, which would be nice because then those people would be inside the city limits and have greater access to the, stuff to go on that goes on in Cedar Willy. But really, it just makes sense for the property. There really aren't any properties this size still inside the city limits that aren't built on. And it just makes sense to have it be R7 when we're R7 on the other side. So. That's really, it's not going to change the landscape a lot. It will just give us about two additional lots. So, probably about 10 houses, I believe, with the main house that we live in will be staying.
And I'd like to mention, I did do the math for this, and under the current R5 zoning, she can get about 8 to 10 houses. If it were approved to go to the R7 zoning, she's would be able to get between 10 and 15. So,
but if you draw it out, we can't really get that get that much. We're going to keep about a half an acre with the house. We do have geotech scheduled, but I grew up in Cedar Willy, even though we were in Mount Vernon for a number of years, and we actually lived down the road from here about 30 years ago. And this is old river bottom, so there shouldn't be any problems with any kind of wetlands or anything on the property.
At that particular point, that's out of all of our control, right? I deal with a lot of land. It's going to be what it's going to be is what it comes down to at the end of the day. So, well, we're going to see you at the public hearing anyway when this gets scheduled, next month or so. So we'll have a lot more data at that particular point. Okay. Moving on.
Thank you. Moving on to the Benson rezone request. So this one is a 0.85 acre parcel of land. It's over on 406 Ball Street. So this one's currently zoned residential, and they're asking for a zoning change to go to R15, residential 15 zoning. The idea there is they are looking to do a multifamily development here. So, let's see. Sorry. So the property right now, as it is currently undeveloped. There's quite a bit of vegetation on there. It's unknown whether or not critical areas exist on site, similarly with Ms. Peterson, so there haven't been any critical areas reports done on this property. Looking at the Skagit County IMAP, it looks like there was, at one point, a single-family residence back in 1969.
I'm sorry, Nicole, could you tell me one more time where it's located?
It's at 406 Ball Street.
406 Ball, okay, thank you.
Yeah. So it looks like there was a single-family house on there, 1969 around then. In 2005, it was demolished around that time period. This is just looking at aerial images, so I don't have the actual any permits or anything. But since then, since 2005, it's sat undeveloped with tree coverage, bushes, grass, that sort of thing. So... then uses surrounding the area, we've got to the north, there's a 30-unit apartment complex, a church to the south, single-family homes to the east and west. You'll see that the adjacent zoning directly to the north is R15, so they're asking for that R15 there, kind of match up with the apartment complex that's to the north there. They've said that they are looking to provide low-income housing. They're looking for, let's see, what was the number of units? They want to do 2 12-unit multifamily buildings here. And currently under the R7 zoning, they'd only be able to get about 4 to 5 housing units on there. So, the property is about 0.85 acres in size.
So they're not going to get 2 12 units.
Yeah, no way. Yeah.
Maybe one. Did we do the math on that?
Yeah. So 15 units per acre.
And 0.8 acres.
You'd be able to get 12 max.
12 max.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 12 max.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you said that, I was like, there's no way. So it's not big enough.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be a discussion for another day. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just looking at that aerial. It's kind of weird where you have the 2 R15s directly next to it. And I wasn't here when that zoning went in. And then you just have that one little piece that they're proposing that, right? I mean, it's like you would think it'd be contiguous on how we did that zone there. It's just like it comes on out. Or they could have been rezones on those properties next to it.
Yeah. Maybe I misspoke. I think they were trying to do 2 6-unit buildings. I had 12 units in my mind. But 12 units max.
It's just a zone. It's a zoning change to R15. And you're looking at more apartments. Mm-hmm. So that's a discussion for a different day.
There you have it.
Anybody have any questions regarding the rezone that we're going to see a lot more of in the next couple months? Because I'd rather talk about streeteries when we're done.
I don't have anything today.
Silas, Paul, anything?
Nope.
I know staff is not making a recommendation tonight, but I did have a question. Thinking back to the last time we had rezone requests come to us, since there is adjacent R15 for this second one and R7 for the first proposal, neither of these would be considered spot zones, correct?
Okay.
Yeah, it's the first thing I looked at too. No, because you're right, the properties right next to it are.
And I know another concern that had come up previously was the percentages of all of the different zones and the comp plan. But, of course, that update is coming around again. Mm-hmm. And I believe I read in here some justification on the part of the applicants, I believe both of them, about looking at the data from the last go around with Cedar Woolley having a shortfall of housing. Yeah. Which I thought was interesting.
I was happy to see how well the applicants had done their research in the comprehensive plan, looking at our actual numbers and things like that, trying to fill in those gaps in the low-income housing department. So yeah, it was cool to see. But, yeah, we'll have to take a look at that.
So the plan is to have public hearings at the next meeting.
Okay.
For both of these. And it'll be up to the Planning Commission if they want to have any further meetings, but it could be as soon as, you know, you could make a recommendation next Planning Commission meeting if you so choose.
I don't see anything here earth-shaking and going R5 to 7s, and in this particular case, on even on 15, directly next to it is the exact same thing. We're not talking this massive density changes on really anything. And, you know, we have some really nice R7 neighborhoods, too. I mean, and, you know, we are under, you know, just like any other community, to, you know, improve density in 5 to 7. It isn't anything that's like a 5 to a 15. That's a different deal on 2 acres. But not in this particular case. But we'll wait for that hearing and get all that stuff out of it and everybody will have their say on top of it.
That's good.
Possible amendments for streeteries. Let's talk about that.
So we're closing the agenda item 1 and moving on to agenda item 2.
Yes.
And thank you, Liz, for being here.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you next month either way, and you'll know more at that time as well. Because sometimes it doesn't look like a wetland, then somebody does a dirt sample, and it is.
We won't be doing any wetland studies in before the rezone.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to need to do it anyway. That would affect the density at the end of the day.
We have geotech coming out, I will have an answer on that within the next 2 weeks, actually.
I get it. I'm just saying, you know, the 7 will allow for X, but by the time you actually take a look at the site, it might have other ideas. That's all I meant. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Okay, item number 2. Can we move on to item number 2?
Absolutely. Okay, so this one is for the allowance of permanent sidewalk, we're calling them streeteries. So another word for these is parklets. So currently permanent sidewalk cafes are in allowed use in the Central Business District. These are specifically gathering spaces on the sidewalk in front of a business in the Central Business District. There are certain criteria and regulations for these already in the code. However, permanent streeteries were not included with that. So this is to kind of, this is in an effort to provide downtown business owners with an additional option for accommodating additional customers, create a more lively downtown environment for people, you know, walking the streets, they'll see those parklets and get excited to come and eat. So back in 2012, 2013, the council approved temporary ordinances that allowed the use of sidewalks and public parking spaces in front of restaurants in the CBD for private dining areas. Those were just temporary ordinances, and once they expired, the Business Development Committee kind of discussed that those had been really positive for those downtown business owners. They got a lot of, you know, people in from the streets, a lot of business from those, and it made downtown just a really vibrant place. We had good reviews from people just in the public as well. So they kept the permanent sidewalk cafes because of that. In 2014, that was when they were permanently allowed. So later years, we had the sidewalk cafes in 2014. So
not parklets.
Yeah, 2014, sidewalk cafes, not parklets. In 2020, we had the COVID pandemic. So we kind of looked at this again. So we did an allowance for temporary outdoor dining areas. So they could, so business owners could open up temporary sidewalk cafes and parklets as well, temporary. Those were intended to allow people to have those additional customers because of the indoor occupancy requirements. You can only have so many people inside. So we thought, okay, we'll just have them outside. So that way they're not losing business and they still are able to run things how they normally would. So the intent was for those to, for those temporary permits, you know, those to go away once the COVID restrictions were lifted. Those have been since lifted, but we do have at least one that I know of, the Magnolia Parklet still exists. But, you know, they're interested in keeping it still. They've had a lot of, similar to the sidewalk cafes thing, they're kind of excited about, you know, we have a lot of people seeing that and coming and doing business here. So they want to keep that. So we're looking at, you know, we've got public support still evident. There is some concern about the use of the parking spaces in the public, you know, on street parking downtown. So we've put some limitations in for the size, the number of parking spaces you can take up. So I think that this does well in providing those limitations, so not it's not an excessive amount of parking that would be reduced. And so these amendments in here are, these amendments are going to improve and clarify the sidewalk cafe, the existing permanent sidewalk cafe regulations, to kind of match up with what we've proposed with the regulations for these permanent streeteries. We're adding a definition for streetery. And, yeah, the new regulations kind of, they discuss the intent for these, the regulations for location and use. Specifically, they have to be used as, you know, a gathering space or a dining area specific to the associated business. They have to be located in front, directly in front of the business. They can't exceed the width of the business frontage. Construction requirements, kind of, they include some provision for ADA accessibility. You have to have your ramp, non-slip surface, those kinds of things. You can't take up ADA parking spaces. Public safety, there's regulations for how the barrier facing the public street is supposed to be constructed. Right-of-way use and access, you know, we've got like street sweepers and things like that. You need to be able to have these things easily removed so that way when your street sweepers are going by or maybe a snowplow or something like that, it's not going to be in the way. Making sure it's not going to be covering utility lines, those sorts of things.
You know, just to clarify, there's no intention to move these for street sweepers or snow plows. But there are provisions in here to make sure that the owners are maintaining because the street trees and snow plows can't get by.
And this is only in the CBD. So we're not,
No, it doesn't say anything about CBD.
It doesn't? I'm looking at the sidewalk cafes, allowing the use of in the central business district, excluding. Is it me?
Just in the CBD.
Intent, allowing the use of public sidewalks in front of a business in the central business district, excluding state routes. And there aren't any state routes in the central business district. So are we saying mixed commercial, not CBD? I mean,
no. Well, you can do whatever you want.
I think it makes sense in the CBD.
The way I wrote it was intended just to be in the CBD.
Okay.
We can change that if we need to. But
I like the CBD myself. Yeah. But
it seemed like it mirrored what we already have in place for sidewalk cafes pretty closely.
So going on, it kind of clarifies maintenance responsibilities. You know, the owner needs to make sure that they're sweeping and maintaining and making sure everything's closed up and your chairs aren't all over the place outside after, you know, things like that. The Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board policy, they need to be in conformance with that. I've also made sure to update the previous thing for the sidewalk cafes because it's no longer called the Washington State Liquor Control Board. It's the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board now. So just a little update there. Insurance and liability and the required permitting for that. It's all kind of discussed in the amendments. So that's a good overview. Shall we discuss?
Yeah, these are good items, by the way, in the discussion. You know, I've seen other jurisdictions, what they're doing is if somebody wants a streetery or the external service area, they charge them a permit fee. I want to say, I forget who it was. It was like $400 just to even have the opportunity to do that. We don't have anything built in here, and I'm thinking we might.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that seems to me that there's going to be extra city resources that would need to be involved, you know, when you're – because basically you're expanding the dining area, right? So
right now all you need to permit this would be a right-of-way permit.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Kind of curious if other jurisdictions are also doing this because I've noticed same thing in other places I've been that the sidewalk – things are not going away mm-hmm. now that the restrictions have been lifted and they're obviously in the right of way. Yeah, it's very easy to tell anytime they're in the central business district.
Mm-hmm.
Bellingham, Bothell, I can think of a bunch of them. Yeah, especially Bellingham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right off of Holly.
Yeah, the streets no longer are pedestrian
streets. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they're thing for making the, like on the weekend you can park for free sort of thing, if that might be part of why. It's a lot of their parklets are taking up the on-street parking.
But you know what's interesting about Cedar Woolley? If you go behind the Woolley Market where all the public parking is, there is always a ton of space available. Mm-hmm. It's just that people don't like to walk, I think. That's my own observation.
I had two questions on this. At some point, will there be any kind of a poll of central business owners to see if they like the idea, or is that handled in the public meeting part of it? And the second is, you know, we have really dark afternoons and dark days, and I'd hate to have somebody run into one of those full of people. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of reflective signage or anything that could be that could make it safer? You know, I'm seeing a lot more people putting up those, I don't know what they're called, poles. And I guess you can't do it here because it's a temporary thing. But I just worry about somebody losing control and instead of running, you know, into a building that's full of, you know, it's got glass and walls into this thing protected by a tent and you could have multiple injuries. That's just a concern for me.
I would think we'd want, you know, police and fire to maybe make a comment on something like that because they're the ones that would be responding to an incident like that. But yeah, Paul, you're absolutely right. I mean, because basically you're in a parking spot, an extension to that, and, you know, things happen. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Somebody hit the gas pedal instead of the brake. I mean, it happens all the time. So,
or even somebody with less than nice motives. When I worked at Western Washington University in big areas, we put up holes everywhere so cars couldn't get onto them.
Because I'm thinking Magnolia is the only real example that we have right now that I think did a great job. I mean, you know, it's...
It's been a while since I've been to downtown Anacortes, but they had similar thing pretty far out into the, well, in the parking area out in the, street.
I like the concept. I think it helps the businesses, but I worry a little bit about safety and whether the other business owners will get peeved by spaces taken away. I don't know. Maybe they're okay with it.
I would say anything that generates more traffic into the CBD, people typically wander around, right? So it's not like you're just going to sit in that one spot, especially in the summertime. You see people coming from all over, you know, coming into town just to check it on out. So anything that drives traffic into the CBD, I don't think is a negative thing. How about you, Silas? How do you feel about something like that? Because you're pretty proactive on those types of concepts.
I love it. I think that it's great getting people out onto the street and giving businesses a different option is great and should be encouraged any way we can.
Pat, down to you.
Yeah, I love these things. When we travel, this is the kind of places we are gravitate to. So either the roll-up door places like the bullpen is, or the street sidewalk places. I'm totally on board. And I think there are lots of – my mind was turning about safety things there. So, there's bollards you can roll out that will help with those situations. But as we well know, that if somebody steps on the gas, they can go right through the side of a even a brick front, brick veneer front building very, very easily. But bollards are a good way that, if they just sit there, or big planters, heavy planters. That's probably my main concern too. So is integrating.
Yeah, that's what we did all around Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now how it reads is for the barrier bit, streeteries shall be enclosed on the three sides, not adjacent to the curb, with railing or another approved barrier of at least 42 inches in height. Barriers may include but are not limited to railings, planters, and backs of attached seating, i.e. benches. So we can certainly beef that up, like to get fire and police in and see what they think,
yeah,
too.
They're the experts.
Mm-hmm.
Like certain things are minimal requirements. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can ask the police how many cars get hit downtown and see if there actually is a risk. I hate to require that they put, bolt metal built barriers around these things when it's not a problem.
Yeah. One of the, just having something so they're more visible, I think, would be a big help because it's so dark.
Just some reflectors
in the winter.
Or something like that.
Even planters, you can do a lot of things that look more tasteful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think planters are the big thing because not only are they visual, but they are also
a barrier.
They're also heavy because they have dirt and stuff in them, and it kind of does both jobs. Versus, if you signs are okay, but if you do signs too much, then it's just a lot of more visual noise, which could even add to the problem.
Right, so, distracting. Right, exactly.
Right, distracting. Whereas plants are calming and whatnot. So anyway, I think planters are the big deal there for you.
Well, the magnolia tent or whatever you call it, I think is blue. Am I right? But it's but you can see it. I would just be concerned about somebody who did tenting that was black or dark gray or something like that.
Most of the ones I've seen are like the white or tents.
Yeah, white would be great.
Talk about tents, or if even tents are even allowed.
I didn't know.
You probably want to say tents aren't allowed.
Tents are not allowed.
Should we say something like tents aren't allowed? Because first of all, they get pretty ratty. Our temporary requirements were kind of discouraged tents, but allowed umbrellas. So if you have an open space, like if you have one that's not enclosed with a roof, like Magnolia is, I don't think you want to allow somebody to put a 10x10 tents up there that just get kind of wind blown and ratty, or those Costco carport things like.
Yeah,
I would discourage those.
But there's some really nice looking custom tenting you could do to actually, from an architectural standpoint, make it look a little bit more decorative. I mean, there's places that make all custom stuff. I'm not talking about the Costco kind or the Dick's Sporting kind, but
I think you want to address it.
Yeah,
I don't see it in here.
So what's kind of, I'm getting the sense, is being kind of envisioned is something slightly more permanent. It would still be movable and not attached, obviously, to the ground, but an actual structure. So even if the structure was wood or whatever, the cover couldn't be
material. I think kind of how we do our requirements for awnings, and that sort of thing.
Very similar, yeah.
Because if you make it out of the right kind of material, and if you're concerned about safety, that wouldn't so much be the roof as the sides mm-hmm. that people would be.
Yeah. And it's times outside that you want pure sun. You don't even want anything on top of you. Mm-hmm. So I can see in the wintertime, or right now, if you even call this the spring, there's a need for all types of, you know, coverage on top of you.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's something that definitely we want to think about. But, yeah, we have some decent code already in place for awnings and things like that that are kind of similar. Yeah, sure.
I'm kind of curious where the idea of streeteries kind of originated. Was it something other cities are looking into, or it just kind of was a logical follow-through to address these structures not being removed at the end of the COVID pandemic?
It existed long before COVID.
Yeah. Europe is filled with them. You go to any major European city.
Here in town, at least with like Magnolia. I mean, I noticed that one hadn't gone away.
We allowed them first in 2012. So Coconut Kenny's had this one in 2012.
Well, sidewalk cafes, but actually in the street.
Uh-huh. Coconut Kenny's had one. Yeah. And,
in the street.
There was a barbecue place that was in where Magnolia is now.
Okay, so this is basically a continuation of the temporary and making this long-term as well.
Those were ones that were permitted back in 2012 under our rules that were allowed them. Those rules sunsetted. They weren't the temporary COVID kind, but they were rules that were in place for 2 or 3 years.
Okay, which were mentioned in here.
And then we let it sunset because those places, those businesses removed them and then didn't put them back, so we just let it sunset.
That was that temporary ordinance that was mentioned here. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's just kind of logical follow-through on that, okay? Because I would be kind of interested, but it may be too recent if anybody has done anything in other jurisdictions and if they've addressed that, but it might be difficult to find that.
Bellingham has them, Bothell has them. Bellingham's actually right next door. And
I haven't been.
Because I know at least with the pandemic, which it sounds like this is kind of a separate thing, those things oftentimes were handled under a right-of-way permit that was kind of a temporary measure that was supposed to be renewed every year. Whether or not that happened is a different story, but I believe that's how it was handled in Laconia and also in Mount Vernon.
No, I'm thinking in Mount Vernon on First Street, you got a bunch of places that mm-hmm. there's outdoor seating, and it's great because I've sat outside mm-hmm. a bunch of times.
And those are right-of-way permits. Yeah. So. But that brings up another question. Would this be until a new owner comes in? How would this permit have an expiration? Would it have to be renewed every year? We don't really address that.
Good question.
It would just be allowed. Yeah. Just like once you apply for a sidewalk dining cafe, you don't have to remove it every year.
Okay. So even if the business changed owners, it would still be okay.
I mean, we could probably build something in that says it needs to be revisited or re-upped every certain amount of time, every year or two or three.
If staff doesn't think it's necessary, I just wanted to ask the question.
You know, the businesses might want to put something on there that's, like, unique to their own business, right? So when you have a new business owner come in and they're taking over, you know, make sure that your stuff reflects your own business, right? So we kind of I'll take a look at things that we have, like, for our design standards and signage requirements, too, because it'll...
Back to that, maybe it might be a good idea to have, like, an annual inspection for fire, just something really minor to make sure that structure hasn't been modified for power and all different types of things, that somebody goes in there before the busy season gets and takes a double eye on it.
Fire already does... They already do inspections at all the businesses.
So that would include, we would incorporate that inspection of anything exterior to the building, you would think? Is that how the code's written now?
Mm-hmm. They'd take a look at it.
If they see something they don't like, they'll point it out.
I'm just saying as a matter of practice.
Should put something in code for that.
I don't think it matters where it is. If they see it and they think it's a fire problem, they're going to say something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had one question. You had a what's IBC standards?
International Building Code.
Okay. I thought you meant that, but I didn't think of that with.
Shouldn't be abbreviated.
Okay.
With an external, like, kind of basically a temporary structure. It's not permanent. It could be moved. As far as maintenance responsibilities, exactly what do you have in mind with something like that?
Well, 1 second. So I was looking for IBC.
I'm just looking at the discussion stuff, like maintenance responsibilities. That's always a good one. So like, we should have some minimal standards on.
Section E in the streeteries bit. So
okay.
The first one is the business owner is responsible for maintaining the safety and physical upkeep of the streetery structure. The business owner is responsible for sweeping the streetery inside and around the streetery dining area. Business owner is responsible for keeping the curb free of debris that might interfere with stormwater conveyance or other street-side utilities or amenities. Street sweeping machinery will be unable to operate normally around streeteries. The business owner is responsible for sweeping the street within 20 feet laterally from the streetery, and chairs must be removed or secured by close of business each day. Tables must be permanently affixed, removed, or secured by close of business each day.
They would want to do that anyway. Reminds me of like the Safeway carts you see all over the place.
My wife went to Fred Meyer the other day, and her it malfunctioned, but her cart actually locked up all four wheels because they have some kind of a thing that goes off and locks the wheels on their carts so that the homeless people can't walk off with them, and nobody can walk off with them.
That is so long. Those things cost a lot of money, and I'm surprised they haven't done something like that in the longest time.
Yeah, or tracking, some kind of tracking thing.
Something.
He apologized profusely. My wife was like trying to drag it, and the wheels wouldn't roll. And then she saw the guy that was collecting the carts and said, "What's wrong with your cart? It was working in the store, but now suddenly it quit working." And he says, "Oh, it malfunctioned. Sorry, we'll."
Well, it's the same technology as the electric fence for dogs, right? Just attach the zapper to the wheels. Does anybody have anything else on the discussion items? That was Paul. Anyone here?
I'm good.
Okay.
I have a quick comment, but it could probably be saved for the next round. But I just noticed since it looked like the sidewalk cafes had been updated from dining areas to cafes, those word replacements there in Section E that hadn't been done. So just thought I'd mention that.
There are all these companies out there now that are building tiny homes on, that are on trailers, and I'm waiting for somebody to come up with these streetery things so that instead of having to dismantle them, they can just pump the tires back up and drive them around and park them, in a garage or cover them with a tarp someplace.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know what
too.
I'm saying? Yeah. I'm surprised somebody hasn't already cornered that market.
But that makes a practical idea, too, because during the really yicky time of year, I mean, Metcalf will get buried in snow just to pull that stuff off and put it in a safe place before.
Well, nobody's going to eat out anyway.
Right.
But instead of having to take it apart, maybe it just folds folds a couple ways, and then you just drive off with it. And
I'm pretty handy with a skill saw.
Well, during COVID, at least, there were plenty of people freezing and eating outdoors.
I've
seen people over at Magnolia during the wintertime, too. I know I did it. So
we use them a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's the first thing you see as you're driving down the street.
It is,
So it kind of catches your eye, makes you go, I think I'm going to stop there, have some dinner outside.
Okay, unless we have something else, this is a lot of really good things to take a look at. So I was going to close the new business and move on to Planning Commission discussion items, my favorite, legislative roundup. Yeehaw.
Well, the Planning Commission had asked for a roundup of any new legislative changes that may affect land use. And it's still a little too early to tell. The only one that looks to probably pass is an ADU change. And that one will, if it is passed both Ledge House and the Senate and is waiting signature by the governor, and it will require all cities, not cities of certain sizes, to allow two ADUs in all single-family zones. It will also require that all ADU impact fees be no more than 50% of a regular single-family.
That's two per lot?
And you're allowed two per lot.
Wow.
There's all sorts of, you know, like ifs and thens. You know, if you've got a lot under a certain size, then fewer. And so we'll see what the final shakedown is, if the governor signs it or does any strike-throughs like he did last time. There was an ADU ordinance that passed the Ledge.
Can I just put three of them on my lot and call one of them my house?
So, you know, there needs to be a primary structure. So one of them has to be the house. And the size limitation's gone up to 1,000 feet. So we won't be able to require ADUs to be less than 1,000 feet, square feet. And right now require them to be no more than 800 square feet. There's preemption of parking requirements if you're close to transit. And I haven't read this thoroughly and because I know it may change. So it's kind of like I don't want to invest too much time in memorizing and learning this so well if it's going to change. Mm-hmm. So I apologize if I don't have all of the details handy. It's Engrossed House Bill 1337 is the one that I'm referring to.
Say again?
1337. House Bill.
That's the one that started with the population requirements, depending on what you can do. There was like 25,000 and above.
There was multiple ADU ordinances, or not, Ledge changes, I should say. So this is the one that passed first. There is still a possibility that a separate ADU ordinance may pass, and then I don't know what would happen if they pass two. They would not necessarily coincide with each other, so then there would be a reconciliation process, presumably. So still waiting on that. Ledge has about a week. Are they out Sunday or next Sunday? They're out soon, and then the governor has some like a month to sign all of them. So still a little early to know what form this is going to look like. But in the form that it's at right now, the city of Cedaroli will have 2 years or so. We'll have 1 year, a year and a half from the time that our comprehensive plan update is due. So our comprehensive plan update is due June of 2025. So that puts us out till December of 2025 that we would have to make any changes. And so we would have to address our impact fees. We'd have to lower them. Right now we're two-tiered. So the bigger ADUs, you pay 60% of an impact fee. So that would have to change. And the smaller ones now pay 30% of an impact fee. So that one wouldn't necessarily have to change. We may have to address parking based on what is defined as a transit stop. I don't know if that means bus stop or if that just means like the transit hub over, the parking lot over by the Walgreens.
I was going to say, that's one I can't even think of.
But if it means bus stop, that gets really complicated because bus stops change. And now that the city has a circulator route, the bus that goes throughout town, I don't know if that means we would have to look at all of those bus stops every time we issue an ADU permit.
So if you're not required to have parking spaces, sorry, I'm looking at this from a landlord's point of view. If you don't have any parking spaces and you have ADUs, then you can use the fact that they have a car as a denial deny renting to somebody.
I'm certain that the legislation does not address that.
The courts will, I assume.
The idea is, you know, the idea is that states are trying to discourage people from having cars.
Yeah.
Because that's the solution to parking and traffic is fewer people in cars. So if you're allowing more density and there's not parking, well, great. You don't have a car. Then you won't have a car because there will be transit available to you.
But how did that work in New York City and Chicago and Kansas City?
Yeah, people in New York don't have cars, and people in Seattle don't have cars. It is actually happening in the bigger cities, but they still have traffic.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that really plays out in a rural city like Cedar Woods.
Right.
Having a bus that circulates here around town is handy, so you can, you know, get to the grocery store or downtown or the hospital and doctor stuff, but you can't really make it outside of the city, so you still kind of need a car.
Yeah.
The one-size-fits-all solutions, and that's the biggest criticism of a lot of government entities, from federal to state to cities, and every place is unique. Yeah, in Seattle that could work, in Tacoma that could work, but in a place like here, I mean, unless you want to run 4 miles into Burlington and get someplace, good luck. Right. And there's no way to even do it because I see people walking from the Skagit Hotel all the time, and it's about somebody's going to get killed on that road, and they already have. Okay, there's no way to walk from that place. So, yeah.
Well, we are building a sidewalk along there.
So. Good. It needs to happen.
Yeah, it's already in the works.
That's good to hear.
So that's that one. There's a lot more details on it, but it does look like we will be addressing ADUs in the next couple of years.
But
the other one that is passing but hasn't made it through both houses yet is what is this one? Allowing us to skip SEPA review for more residential unit types. So, like, right now you have to run a State Environmental Policy Act notification. That's the SEPA notification for any new developments of more than four units. This is going to add a requirement or add an exception, categorical exemption to the SEPA rules that would allow us to not have to go through that notification process for more residential units. So it makes it easier to build residential units by eliminating that stepped requirement for SEPA. There's also passing, and I'm not sure exactly where it is, limited design review for residential construction, not just single family. But right now, we don't do single family. We do a little bit of design review for single family, but for bigger projects, it's going to limit what you can do.
And what, give an example?
Well, first of all, it would have to be administrative, so no more going to like a
hearings examiner or anybody else.
Right. So it's meant to streamline it, but not entirely handcuff cities from being able to do design review on residential projects. The missing middle bills are still alive. That one, the one that's in the most likely, there's a couple of them, but the one that seems to be the one that's likely to pass does have exemptions for cities under 20,000 square feet or under 20,000 people. So if it does pass, in its current form, it does not appear to have any impact on Cedro Woolley. But there's a couple that I think are still alive. I think there's that one and a zombie one that you just never know might come back.
You know, we've had this discussion before on ADUs. Just because you put it in code, it doesn't mean it's going to happen. We've had barely anybody coming in for ADU permits because, number one, it's expensive. You need to have all your permits and everything else. I mean, how many people came forward when we gave that grace period?
None.
Well,
no, people don't know about it either, right?
Yeah.
Well, we advertised it.
But, you know, people are busy. They don't necessarily pay attention.
Or they don't want to pay attention.
And they don't want to. It's been picking up. I think we've had four in the past year, I'd say, applications.
Four.
Yeah. It's picking up, though. Yeah. And we
yeah. I was only half joking when I said, can you put three on a lot and just have one slightly bigger and call it the main house?
Well, yeah.
Because I'm actually thinking about doing
that. Yeah, you can. Like, yeah. It would be your main house and then two ADUs.
Yeah.
So that's three on a lot. But one of them has to be called a main house.
Right, yeah. No, one of them has to be the main house. The person that lives there all the time has to be, who owns the property actually has to live in.
Oh, I forgot the big part. They've stripped the owner occupancy requirement.
There is none.
So can't require owner occupancy.
Right. Yeah. So, what the state is doing is just making it so that people who want to have a lot of apartments can have tiny little tiny home apartments to rent out to people in a neighborhood. So they're going around the multifamily thing completely.
Totally. Yeah. So basically, you can have a triplex, and they don't have to be attached.
Yeah, and you don't have to be in a which is multifamily safer. Housing area to do it.
You're safer if they're not attached.
Yeah.
That's from a building perspective. Yeah. That is a concern of mine. Is to have a duplex, you have to have fire separation between the two units.
Right. Yeah.
To have an ADU and attached to a single family home, how is that physically any different than a duplex?
Not.
But yet there's no fire separation requirement.
Right.
So that's concerning. And it still does not appear to be addressed in the legislature, because it's something that the building code people are like, it's not a duplex. So how is it not a duplex when you look at it from safety standards?
Yep.
So it just is.
So I've got two lots. I can get six units on them. That's great.
And you would be addressing.
I have no ulterior motives.
The housing crisis in the state's eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're idiots. But
the intention is for people to do this. I mean, that's why they're passing these rules.
Oh, I understand.
They want people to be like, oh, well, I can put two units on it. Well, that's a lot different than just putting one unit. One unit's expensive.
Doesn't mean it's smart.
Less expensive.
I can't even stand my neighbor's dogs, much less having people living in my yard.
Yeah, seriously.
I have a question. The owner occupies. Covenant. So what I get from that, the benefit to that is like you have the owner on site and they are able to kind of oversee.
Right, shotgun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And so besides that benefit, what other benefit is there to having that?
Well, the theory has always been for the city is that if you have the owner living on site, that they manage the site better. They make sure that it stays upkept. And when you don't have the owner on site, then it really is just a duplex with two separate renters living on one property, and renters don't have the same investment in the upkeep and aesthetic improvements on the site. So the idea of
like
the
a code enforcement nightmare
it could be, or just lead to less upkeep of neighborhoods, which then leads to a decline in property values. Got houses that don't look nice.
Yeah. Here's an example. I was at an 8-unit condominium today up in Bellevue, right next to Western Washington, next to the university. And out of the 8 units, only one owner actually lives in that building. Everybody else does not live there. The place is a crap hole. Okay, I'm talking basic maintenance.
Is that a technical
term? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can actually give a better definition of it. But anyway, they could care less about mismatching paint, peeling, mold, anything. When an owner is there, they're going to take a lot more care in the structure itself. So that was a thing. But, yes, we can define these different things, absolutely.
So
I want to say I agree with that 100%.
Right down High Street.
Up in, Western Washington University, the problem there is you're near a university, so the property values aren't going down, and the absentee landlords are packing in tons of kids who take up all the parking, who party, and they don't maintain the houses. I had a kid, one of my sons rented a house with, it was supposedly three bedrooms. There were six of them in it.
Yep.
And they had problems with the heater flaming up. I mean,
So you go right down High Street, all those buildings are like that, and it's out of control. I mean, it's like Animal House.
It's Billy Frank Jr. Street.
Was that?
Yeah, it is Billy Frank. No, no. Do you know there was a house on
High Street is still alive and well. Absolutely.
There was a house on that street that was right so infused with meth that they had to go in and scrape out all the walls.
I was at 830 High Street today, unit number 201, and right next door, the kids next door. I mean, beer cans all over lawn furniture. They had lawn furniture up on the roof of the garage. I was just like, wow, check it out.
So that is my legislative roundup for today. Sorry, there's just they're not done.
Yeah,
so I don't.
Right. And hopefully they'll never be done. But if they are, we'll deal with it. So.
Yeah,
they don't really need us anymore. The legislature is going to plan it all for us. And
no, you're needed more than ever to make sure that we're able to craft rules for the city that meet the state standards, but are still CEDRA-Woolley centric. So your work is becoming more and more challenging as you have more regulations to work around.
I see.
Yeah, I think that's one way to look at it. We've done a good job at it, though. We've tried to front run a lot of things that have come out of Olympia in a positive way.
Yeah.
And what we've actually put in code is pretty darn close to what's coming out of Olympia.
Yeah, I know.
That's
what scares me.
Well, yeah. But we still front rent, and I don't see any like run on ADUs right now. Like I said, it's expensive. At least there's standards for it. I mean, these are structures people are going to be living in, and they're not cheap to do.
I'm just in a bet with my daughter that 20 years from 2018, in 20 years we would be authorizing wood boxes instead of cardboard boxes like they have in Soweto back in the day. But that we will be approving that kind of. Structures, wooden boxes, basically, for people to live in.
That's all we had.
Okay. So with that, I would like to make a motion to adjourn. Would anybody like to take it first?
Second.
Okay. Second. Do I have a first?
No.
We need a first.
Sorry.
I make a motion.
Okay, you made the first. Second to adjourn. Take a second.
Oh, I'll second that.
We have a second. Do we have any further comments? None. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Meeting is adjourned at 7:57 p.m. Thank you, John. We're going to miss you.